Blog Talk Radio.
Spiritual beings
and aliens, because apparently there could be an awful lot of
aliens listening in.
Actually,
oh goodness, yes. What on earth will they think of planet Earth? Well, welcome to planet Earth, everybody. This week, Clara, what will we be doing this week?
Today we are looking at...
Oh, look, no, it's Rosie Wall, Director of Creative Women, and...
Clara Gibson,
life, health
and well-being
coach. I thought it would be important that we introduce who we are, in fact.
Well, yeah. That's always quite useful, really,
yeah.
Isn't it? Because people will just sort of like hear our dulcet tones. And maybe Wes is. That's the dog. If you, he might occasionally bark.
Yeah.
Yes. He likes to express his view, too.
Well, I mean, if those aliens are tuned in, they need to identify who we are so that they might beam us up.
Well, he could beam us up, they could beam us up, maybe, but actually, maybe we're aliens.
Oh, hang on a minute. Right, like, back to the original point. But that's a whole other episode.
It is. Really, yeah, we could be aliens. Oh.
We're all made of stars, Clara, we're all made of stars.
We are.
I know, we are,
glorious.
Honestly, yeah.
That's the carbon in us.
Don't get us started on that.
No, but actually, it's very appropriate.
Yes.
Because, right, today we're focusing on life and death.
Death and mourning. I think they're
life, death, mourning,
yeah,
and living.
Living as part of the whole,
yeah, process. Because, and that's why we tie in with stars. Because if it wasn't for dying stars, we wouldn't have the carbon in order to be human.
I know, that is actually,
so isn't that glorious?
Quite mind blowing.
It is wonderful.
And I know it too. I can see everybody's star shining.
You're so wonderful. And yes, everybody does.
And you are so
and
wonderful,
that's so,
Clara.
No, but that's so fabulous, isn't it? That people all have that glory within them.
I think the critical thing today when we wanted to talk about...
Life and death
is the issue pertaining to the loss of life. And Clara and I have really, you know, gone through the mill, as other people out there have, in relation to dealing with grave parental
grave
black humor again Clara, grave difficulties with illness in our family, which of course led to death, and then the mourning process is part of that. And we thought it was just so important to try and address some of these issues, and Clara's got some fantastic tips. I hate that word, tips.
Yeah.
But methods, processes, ways
strategies.
Of living
How
your
about
life.
Strategies?
Yeah, strategies to try and help the process. So we're going to share today a bit about our personal lives and our experiences, and then address...
I'm going to let you go first.
Am I going first?
You are.
All right, I'll be your speaking guinea pig.
Yeah.
What was that?
Rosie killing the guinea pig.
Oh, I do apologize. Dead guinea pig. I've gone through, as other people of my certain age have gone through, deaths of their parents. I was brought up by three amazing human beings in their different ways, and I watched them all die horribly, actually, really quite traumatically.
Awful.
My uncle, I was brought up by my uncle, my auntie, and my mother. And my uncle, the fittest man in the history of the world, riding bicycles all over the place till he was in his mid-70s.
Wonderful.
Organic eating. You know, we've spoken about uncle before.
Yes.
But he had a massive stroke and was paralyzed down the right-hand side of his body and was unable to speak.
Oh, gosh.
And he lived in that state for 7 years.
Was he somebody like you who liked talking a lot, too?
Well, of course, you know, he was my rock as far as discussion was concerned.
So how awful for him?
Absolutely horrific, because it's a very complex way of existing. So my auntie and I had to witness his horrors, and he had
Poor
to go
man.
Through that. My mother died of cancer. And my auntie had some kind of stomach issue that resulted in her death. They never actually worked out what it was in the end, but it was a horrific six-month period where I was in ICU, and she was just begging me to have the machine turned
on. Oh, really, poor woman.
So, you know, I've done my time, Clara's done her time, but I have to say, just driving here today to do this broadcast, I'd like to make a tribute to the three beautiful people who contributed to making me so amazing,
aww,
both genetically and through the process of nurture. Driving here today, I carry them in my eyes.
Oh,
and I carry them in my soul and my spirit and the philosophies that I believe in. And I think that is so beautiful. And if it can resonate in this recording, possibly through eternity, hey, and up there through to the aliens for always, I would be so incredibly honoured. But part of that process, I didn't want to, you know, share with Clara and all you guys out there, was I went through a mourning process that was nuts. I behaved very, very strangely.
In what
and
way?
I really was dysfunctional for quite a while. And, I, you know, there are still some things that hang on. But I think we all do. I think it's a kind of process of not the traditional form of self-harm, but self-sabotage. So there's a kind of self-punishment for many years. In what way? Overt hedonism. Following a period of grieving, obviously, after each of the deaths. But overt hedonism, because I thought I have to stuff life down my gullet in order to feel something again, in order to deal with... Yeah. Well, we talked of guilt and so forth. And I have regrets about that, but at the same time, I lived in the fast lane and I was out there and experienced some extraordinary stratospheric stuff.
I'm surprised you don't drive around in a Jaguar E-Type.
Well, it's amazing. No, I just drive around in an old banger, actually.
I know,
Clara.
You do, yeah. But you could be driving around in an old banger Jaguar E-Type if you like speeding your way through life, really, because that would be
fun. Tell me and tell the listeners about your experiences of having lost, and we were talking about family, but it could be any members, couldn't it?
Well, I mean, I suppose, I mean, the two that were always the most sort of life-changing was probably my first two sons dying. So my first baby died the day after he was born, and my second son was stillborn. And I think it's very interesting, you know, I mean, one of my ways always of dealing with these things has been that I separate and observe.
Yes.
Because it sort of protects me, because I have to say I was, you know, I can't tell you I went down a hedonistic route in any way whatsoever.
Right.
Actually, I'm afraid, in fact, I went mad.
Yes.
And was, I mean, hugely depressed and did require treatment for being I was quite suicidal, if I'm honest. Because I think when you've lost your babies, actually, as human beings, it's sort of like
an extension of yourself.
And your hope.
Even more, because there's so much compassion and
but it's sort of strange,
attachment.
Isn't it? But it's one of those strange things for, you know, those, you know, who have children that you sort of live your life through them.
Yes.
And so it's almost like they're your future, and all of a sudden that's just gone, you know, and you don't have any.
Yes.
And also I felt how much I'd failed and what a useless human being I was. And I also thought, because my mother actually never ever, always used to say that she never ever wanted to have me, so that would sort of like ruminate. And then I would think, they didn't want me either, that's why they left, you know. And it's sort of sad to sort of think about those things, you know. And
so how did you deal there in the immediate time after that they died, Clara?
How did I? Howled a lot.
Right.
I howled desperately.
And then when did it start to get better? or better's not the word, when did it start to get more manageable?
I think, I suppose there was sort of like one day, right, although my mother was a very unhappy woman, she did actually teach me something incredibly useful.
Yes.
She taught me to look at the sky and to find shapes in the clouds.
Oh, how lovely.
And I remember one day sort of like walking along and being very, you know, sort of questioning my existence rather hugely and what was the point in life. And suddenly just looking up and noticing that although it was a grey day, actually there were all of these different colours in the clouds.
Yes.
So there was lilac and there was green and there was blue and there was, you know, all of these different colours. And all of a sudden, I was aware that I was no longer miserable.
Yes.
And it's very interesting because when you look up from a sort of neuro-linguistic perspective, when you look up, it's very hard to be in feelings.
It's very hard to
be caught in emotion.
Caught in emotion.
So when you look up...
So it's the managing of emotion, isn't it?
It's, well, when you look up, you actually are into observing. And your deep emotion, when people are in deep emotion, they typically look down.
Yes, yes, I can see that.
You know, so when you look up, it's, you know, so... And I think that was sort of like... it was like the sort of the... blink of the sun through the clouds, if you like,
yes,
of that. And it sort of like opened up sort of possibilities of realising that life wasn't completely dire.
I can relate to the looking up because my auntie, when she used to walk me to school,
right,
I always used to kind of scuff along the pavement. I think it's part of my original makeup. Walking, scuffing along pavements, looking down. And she'd say, come on, Rosemary. This is me impersonating my auntie. You must look up. Look
Where's
up.
She from?
She's from Bulgaria. Well, I was born in Bulgaria.
Oh, were you?
Yeah, did you not know that?
It's
a discovery,
that.
Yes.
Wow.
And that we're Armenians, but we settled
in... really?
Half Armenian, half Russian. But we settled in Bulgaria, the last generation, and now...
Got a fit.
Yeah, so we are. And so she'd say, Rosemary, look up, look up, look at the beautiful... Look at the beautiful world. Why you look at your shoes? And actually, whenever I feel really down, Clara, it's interesting, that concept of, and now, look up.
Yeah. Ah, lovely.
And I won't break into a round of Barbara Streisand's Yentl right now. Papa, can you see me? Papa, can you find me? Anyway, in the night. No, we won't go there because that's too embarrassing, isn't it?
No.
But actually, Clara.
Actually, I could leave.
Clara could actually sing that.
Rosie was doing a really very, very good job.
But what we need to address here is the beauty that can and was delivered to us through some kind of parenting. I mean, in your instance, I know it's very mixed. And how that carries forward and then can have deep, deep resonance for the beauty of living your life. The difficulty, though, is that phase of when someone is diagnosed with a terminal illness or is going through the process of death that I think can, if you're not very careful, mess with your marbles to such a degree that it can knock out 5 years of your life because of dysfunctional or repetitive behaviours.
Well,
it is a real worry, Clara.
Well, I think it's sort of interesting because there will be those who, you know, are bereaved through sudden death.
Yes.
They have no preparation.
Yes, that's true.
You know, they have no opportunity to, you know, make good anything that they would like to make good. So it's just sort of like wiped away in front of them. And actually, when I was a little, I mean, do you know the Aberfan disaster? Actually, you probably don't.
I don't. No.
Oh, my God, you don't.
No,
because
no.
Rosie
I'm
wasn't.
Only 33.
Rosie wasn't born then, but I was about 8 years old.
Oh, darling.
And the Aberfan disaster was a terrible disaster that happened in Wales when there was this, maybe there was heavy rain or whatever, and this slag heat from the coal mines actually just suddenly just and wiped out an entire school in the village.
Oh my God, how horrific.
And so one of the things that it was one of those early learnings that was, you know, it profoundly moved me, but it altered my way of living to this very day. Because I remember, I mean, sure, I heard about the disaster. It was absolutely horrifying, you know, because, but then I heard about this poor mother who's had been angry with her daughter and had sent her daughter off to school without any breakfast. And the mother was interviewed, I think, or the tale was recounted. And I remember just as an 8-year-old being aware that that mother could never, ever make it good again.
Yes.
And it was so hugely sad. And I'm somebody who cannot, to this very day, leave something
unresolved. Yeah.
You know, so even within the day, yeah, I will resolve it. So
yeah.
Some people say I've been far too soft with my son.
Yeah. Well, I think he's a lovely boy. But
he is a lovely boy.
But what you're talking about is regret. Yeah. And I know when Tara and I, whenever we meet just before we go on air, we always like to go over the main points, and we talked about regret.
Yes.
And I'm not sure how to deal with that concept, because there are some things I wished I had said to my mother, for example, because it's a very complex relationship. How do you deal with regret? How did you deal with regret?
I suppose. I mean, I think the thing is perhaps the learnings that I have got through my work and trainings in, you know, psychotherapies of all sorts, coaching now and neuro-linguistic programming. And over the years, I would say I have integrated those the strategies that I you know, that I help people with, and I know for a fact that they work phenomenally.
Yeah.
And so if we, you know, we aren't our history, you know, so we can't undo anything that was done. And I think I was actually just thinking about this whilst we were awaiting the program to begin. And the issue about, in our culture here in England, the UK, I think we have a propensity to leave things unsaid rather than to be comfortable sort of saying, hey, that really wasn't fair, you were really unfair on that occasion.
So true.
You know,
it's very British not to gush when necessary, because I always go through my life, if I see something beautiful or I think something beautiful about
someone,
I will say it.
Yes.
And the world thinks I'm incredibly strange. I don't know where I get it from. And I don't know why I do it, but I think it's okay to do it, isn't it?
No, that's wonderful.
Right.
But the thing that I think is that in a culture, I mean, that's strange. I do the same thing, so we're very similar in that respect. You know, I mean, I'll see a complete and utter stranger.
They always do like your jacket.
And I'll say, oh, I mean, men, I'll actually say, ooh.
Oh, you're good looking.
Oh, your aftershave smells lovely. You know, and I
that and moment,
and I'll, or you know, women walking. I mean, I remember seeing this
fabulous shoes, darling.
Yes, absolutely.
Know.
You know, and I'll just pass by because on occasions I've experienced it, received it myself,
and
I know.
So fabulous, isn't it? I know. But you're talking about communicating stuff to.
It's the uncomfortable
loved ones.
Stuff.
Yeah.
No, it's the uncomfortable stuff. You know, and because we don't say, you know, that really hurt me just then.
Yeah.
You know, that I found really upsetting. Or I disagree with that. You know, whatever it is that is the slightly more negative thing. Now, some people are happy being negative, but very often they bear a grudge rather than actually saying and being open and honest. Now, I think this leads to the discomfiture that people have in being able to just be much more present and then be able to be more compassionate and self-compassionate in their relationship. I think that when people, you know, sort of like, well, I won't do that because years ago, you know, my mother
ruined my life. I don't know why we've got EastEnders.
Because my mother ruined my life. she didn't like, you know, she told me I looked awful in that dress.
Yes, or something.
And it's,
You have to become an adult. You do have to become an adult. I realised that afterwards.
But even with children, you want
you
them
stay
to
in
learn.
A kind of childlike state about your parents, don't you think?
But I think that if we develop relationships where we could sort of say, hey, do you know something? I really didn't like that. And you would say, but I only said that because, and you'd actually clear the decks and sort it and be able to move on afresh.
But when you're a young person, I mean, my mother was an extraordinarily complex and interesting woman. She would appear at the school gates at the primary school in a golden caftan.
Oh, gorgeous.
And 1,000 bangles. This does not go down well in Middle Hertfordshire, I can assure you. And she'd stand at the gates and she'd say, Rosemarie, why are you late? Come home. Why are you late? What do you? I'm at the rehearsal, mummy. You know, it's like that. And I was always very, very embarrassed about her.
Yeah.
And you don't have the maturity to deal with those things. I remember her saying to me once, Rosemary, you'll always be average. after reading one of my very average reports. But, you know, that did stick with me for years and years and years. And I believe I will always be average, you know.
Well, you could actually now just, because you've accepted it, and you could now accept that you're not, that you're roses.
But when she needed me during her dying process, I was still, dealing with those issues about detrimental thoughts, negativity, and how she really could have contributed in a far more, I mean, there's other stuff, but a more positive, nurturing way that didn't contribute to me having anxiety or depression or anything that we're subject to as part of the process of life. So the blame game is all kind of twisted up and wrapped in and around stuff, isn't it? Or it can be.
And I think the part of the difficulty is that because we sort of take, and it's not surprising, we take things personally.
Yeah.
But the fact is that each individual only acts out of their own centre and their own meaning and belief system that they've created because of their own experiences.
Right.
So whatever anybody does or says has more to do with them than you. And if we were all socialized better and educated better, then the adults, other, you know, like teachers and
I'm a teacher, by the way.
Yes, no, well, indeed. But
the teachers
around at the time or other adults. And then it was culturally normal for us to understand.
Well, this is what I've been saying for years, that actually to bring up a child, it is your uncles, your aunties, your mothers and fathers, it's grandparents, it's a community.
That's a healthy upbringing.
The contribution to the nurturing of a child is all the positivity that is surrounding that particular child. And I think that is critically what got me through my very early years, Clara, and gave me the capacity, the warmth, the understanding to forgive my mother in the end and understand I had to go through the process of supporting her through her death and dealing with it the other side.
Yeah.
But it's very, very difficult. It's a very difficult process and it's such internal work.
It is. But I think this is maybe where some of the strategies that we were discussing earlier
Let's focus on positive strategies.
Come to the fore.
Yes.
Because, whilst somebody is sort of thinking about, you know, either their guilt or, you know, the damage done by their parents.
Yes.
They are not in the present moment. So they are enwrapped in their history, which is then continuing to limit them because they're spending their time looking backwards over their shoulder over things that are long gone.
Yes.
And the thing is, to live your life well, you really need to be present in the moment today, in each moment as we go through life. And I would say that our world stops, it would sort of contribute to us being otherwise focused because, you know, we're expected to, you know, we have a to-do list as long as our arm. We have, you know, the past and the present and all of these things that we're thinking about, and we're not even aware of whether it's sunny or what the temperature is or whether there's a wind on our cheeks or,
yes,
you know, or how the pen feels, because people use pens these days, in our hands.
Sorry, I don't know what that is.
The quill.
Some kind of implement.
Yes, I know. Oh. And so being present in the moment, people eat their dinner and aren't even aware that they've eaten it. That, you know, they've been thinking about what went on in their day, who was nice, who was horrible. Well, probably more likely that somebody was horrible to them than they...
Yes, we focus a lot on that, don't we?
We focus more on what was wrong than what was right,
yes,
even though the moments where something went wrong were probably
minuscule. Unison!
Isn't that amazing?
Oh, that is amazing.
And so, by choosing to focus on the present and what is right now, and being aware of how you feel, you know, being aware of whether you're holding your muscles tight, whether you're breathing shallowly, whether you're, where you're looking.
Look up, everybody. Look up.
Look out. Side of your head.
Tell us what you can see.
Yes. Well, so often when people are thinking about what's happened, they're inside their own head.
Yes, get out of your head. Look around you, be connected. And I know with anxiety as well, which is obviously symptomatic of
fears of the future, though.
You know, these periods of your life of,
yes,
extreme stress. It's about you're telling yourself what to think. So start thinking about positive stuff that's around you.
Yes, and another interesting little
tip out
is that our unconscious mind,
oh yes,
does not know the difference between what is true and what is false. So if you say to yourself, oh, the reason why everything goes wrong in my life is because I'm rubbish, or because
I'm average.
Oh, because you're average. Or, I suppose my physics teacher at least said that he mentioned the word hope. He said, do not give up hope yet on my school report. but he did mention the word hope. So, I mean, what I really do think that we need to do for every single one of us
90 seconds
is, if you are present in the moment, you will pay a better attention to those that you are communicating with. You know, you will be able to focus on what their body language is and how your body language is, and have better eye contact and hear what they're saying, and then therefore have more meaningful conversations and connections.
I would like to say as well that I think we're made up of layers.
Yeah.
Beautiful layers. I suppose like the rings in the inside
of
a
tree.
Yes. And the inner cores are kind of the connections that we've had with our parents and who've nurtured us, all the positive stuff there.
Yeah.
And then as we move out to the further edges, we construct that woodwork ourselves, don't we?
Yeah.
I'd like to feel enriched by what has been given to me through the parenting.
Yes.
And I'd like to say I do carry them in my eyes. And I think we all should cherish the most positive aspects of that nurturing. And if you believe in a spiritual world, which I do, this is just one form of our life.
Yes, absolutely. And we come back because we do not know what.
We do not know what.
And we might be aliens.
This brings us right back to the start, people. We're
stars.
Back to the aliens.
And
we
the
are
stars.
All made of stars.
It's so lovely. Thank you. And bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That was a fun. So, we've got... Bye-bye, we're about to say, I think.